Our second reading picks up where Bill ended in Exodus chapter 1. The king of Egypt said to the Hebrew midwives, one of whom was named Shiphrah and the other Puah, "When you act as midwives to the Hebrew women and see them on the birth stool, if it is a boy, kill him. But if it is a girl, she shall live." But the midwives feared God. They did not do as the king of Egypt commanded them, but they let the boys live. So the king of Egypt summoned the midwives and said to them, "Why have you done this and allowed the boys to live?" The midwives said to Pharaoh, "Because the Hebrew women are not like the Egyptian women, for they are vigorous and give birth before the midwife comes to them." So God dealt well with the midwives, and the people multiplied and became very strong. Because the midwives feared God, he gave them families. Then Pharaoh commanded all his people, "Every boy that is born to the Hebrews, you shall throw it into the Nile, but you shall let every girl live." Now a man from the house of Levi went and married a Levite woman. The woman conceived and bore a son, and when she saw that he was a fine baby, she hid him 3 months. When she could hide him no longer, she got a papyrus basket for him and plastered it with bitumen pitch. She put the child in it and placed it among the reeds on the bank of the river. His sister stood at a distance to see what would happen to him. The daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe at the river, while her attendants walked beside it. She saw the basket among the reeds and sent her maid to bring it. When she opened it, she saw a child. He was crying, and she took pity on him. "This must be one of the Hebrews' children," she said. Then his sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and get you a nurse from the Hebrew women to nurse the child for you?" Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Yes." So the girl went and called the child's mother. Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Take this child and nurse it for me, and I will give you your wages." So the woman took the child and nursed it. When the child grew up, she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and she took him as her son. She named him Moses, because she said, "I drew him out of the water." This is the word of the Lord. I love a movie or a book where good conquers evil. I think we all do. Who doesn't want to see Rey and Finn succeed in their struggle to take down the dark side in the new Star Wars movie? Who doesn't root for Bilbo Baggins and The Hobbit when death by a dragon seems inevitable? When it's entertainment, questions of whether good will conquer evil captivate us. It's a different matter when we're living it. When we're living it, it's normal to ask, can one person make a difference? Can one church? It's good to ask these questions when the hurt and the pain of the world seem too big. It's good to ask these questions because it means we haven't given up. Confronting hurt and evil is something our biblical ancestors faced again and again. More than the excitement we might feel from a movie where the good side wins, the Bible reminds us that it's rarely simple, and it reminds us of where our hope truly lies. We worship a God who died on a tree. We know about pain and suffering, and we know that this God conquered death, and because of this, we keep asking the question, can one person make a difference? We ask this because we know the answer is yes. Our story for today is at the start of Exodus, the second book of the Bible, and things are grim. Genesis, the first book of the Bible, follows the lives of Jacob and his sons. At the end of Genesis, Jacob dies. His sons move from their ancestral land during a famine and live in Egypt, where, in an unlikely twist, son Joseph works closely with the Pharaoh. Jacob's sons and other Israelites trade their land for food and all live and work in Egypt. Exodus begins ominously with a new king who does not know Joseph. Some 400 years have passed, and the Israelites have been in Egypt all that time. What at first sounded like a nice agreement of living and working and having food to eat has become little more than indentured servanthood and quickly becomes slavery. This new king is threatened because the Israelites are strong, and there are a lot of them. And with that, any semblance of Hebrew immigrants living freely in Egypt is gone. The Israelites are now slaves, oppressed and in forced labor, yet they continue to grow in strength and number. The scene is set, and it only gets darker. Concerned that the oppression and labor won't be enough to keep the Israelites down, Pharaoh tells the Hebrew midwives, Shiphrah and Puah, to kill any boy babies who were born. This is how scared he is. He tells women whose job it is to usher in life to end it. As scared as he is, he's also pragmatic. He plans for death of this people in a few generations, but wants to get some more labor out of the people he has for the time being. This cruel tactic is also intended to defeat the people's morale. It doesn't work. Shiphrah and Puah fear God, so they let the boys live. And when questioned by Pharaoh, they tell him the Hebrew women are so strong that they deliver the babies before they get there, so there's no chance to kill them. Frustrated, Pharaoh announces that the new rule is that all male babies shall be thrown into the Nile and drowned. No more nuance, sheer terror. And here the story gets even more grim because we meet one of the families. No longer are these theoretical people. A Hebrew woman gives birth to a son and manages to hide him for 3 months. At that point, she puts him in the Nile, not to drown, but in a basket. This story has long captured the imagination of children, adults too. The woman makes the basket as safe as she can. The Hebrew word used for basket only appears one other place in all of Scripture. It's the same word used for the ark in the Noah story. Like the ark used to keep and preserve life, this mother places her son in a basket in hopes of saving him. Her older daughter follows the basket, watching to see what happens. This girl must know the horrors that so many families around her face. And instead of death, she watches as her brother is found by Pharaoh's daughter, the ultimate plot twist. Pharaoh's fear and insecurity have caused immeasurable pain for God's people. But the bravery of Shiphrah, Puah, the baby's mother, the sister, and Pharaoh's very own daughter change the story. This baby is Moses, and he is raised by his birth mother, the Israelite, and his adopted mother, Pharaoh's daughter. In time, God uses him to free the Hebrew people from Egypt. In time, he goes face to face with Pharaoh and speaks on behalf of God. Can one person make a difference? Yes. Shiphrah, Puah, Moses' mother and sister, Pharaoh's daughter, none of them could stop Pharaoh. None of them could end the fear-driven evil that covered the land, but each of them changed the course of the story. Each of them acted, and each made things better. None of them gave up in the face of evil. Yesterday, there were white supremacist rallies scheduled in several U.S. cities. On Friday, ISIS killed worshipers in an Afghani mosque. Last week, ISIS took credit when terrorists drove into a crowd in Spain, killing 15, injuring many more. Someone we know was bullied at work or school. Someone else is in an abusive relationship. It is all too much. But what this story teaches us, what Shiphrah, Puah, Moses' mother and sister and Pharaoh's daughter teach us, is that while we can't stop all the evil, we can change the story. And changing the story is one step in stopping the evil. Being a Christian is about following Jesus and doing things God's way. Sometimes that doesn't ask a lot of us. It might take some time or some effort, but it might seem easy or natural. That is great. High five for all the times when following Jesus is pure joy. This story reminds us, though, that there are times when following God, when doing the right thing, means doing what is hard and taking a risk. Shiphrah, Puah, Moses' mom and sister and Pharaoh's daughter couldn't stop all the evil around them, but they each took a risk, and God used them. You might have heard a story on the radio this week about Dr. William Lynn Weaver. In 1964, Dr. Weaver was 14, going into 10th grade, and one of 14 black students to be integrating the all-white West High School in Knoxville, Tennessee. He says, as soon as we got into the school, the principal was calling the roll. He said, Bill Weaver. And I said, my name is William. And the principal said, oh, you're a smart N-word. I'd been in school about maybe 30 minutes, and he suspended me. We'd have a test, and teachers would stand over me and then just snatch the paper out from under and say, time's up. The first report card, I got all Fs, including PE. So I've gone from being a good student to starting to think, well, maybe I don't belong. Maybe I am dumb. Mr. Hill, one of William's former teachers, heard he was having trouble, so called him back to his old school one afternoon. He and other teachers began to tutor William every afternoon and on Saturdays. William Weaver is now the chief of surgery in Fayetteville, North Carolina at the VA Medical Center. He doesn't remember a day of high school that a teacher didn't tell him that he didn't belong. But he kept going. A huge risk because there were lots of people, not only those in school leadership, but some hidden people who might harm his family, who didn't want him to be there. It was a risk for his former teachers to help him. And because they were willing to risk in the face of evil, things changed. Not immediately or completely, but things did change, and men and women in the armed services have received medical care under Dr. Weaver's watch. A few years ago, John and Gwen Haspels visited our congregation for worship. The Haspels served as missionaries in Ethiopia for 40 years. From the start, they were at risk of danger. Early on in their service, John was held as a hostage, was released, forgave, and continued to serve. A few years ago, on the verge of retirement, the Haspels were shot, caught in tribal warfare. Both were injured. They returned to the U.S. for some of their recuperation and treatment. It was during that time that they visited us and shared their message, Christ's message of love and forgiveness and hope. Their time on the mission field had been one of great risk. And when he was well enough, John went back to Ethiopia to continue to share God's message of love and forgiveness. You may not be a missionary to another country. You may not integrate a school. But you do have moments that ask you to risk something. It may not happen every day or even every week, but when you start to look around and take in what is happening around you, you will notice the places when something starts to gnaw at you because something needs to be said or done. You might be like Shipra and Pua, just trying to do your job. And you're faced with a decision that challenges you to risk for what is right. My hunch is that there were other people who could have challenged Pharaoh's evil, but didn't because of the risk. I'm so glad those women did. This story teaches us to take the risk. God will use you. God will use us. We take the risk and do what is right. Amen.